So we'll call the meeting of the Agriculture and Rural Development Committee meeting to order the hour of 2:30 p.m. having arrived April 12, 2005. Do we have a quorum at this point? One, two, three. You didn't count me. We have a quorum, so we're officially calling the meeting to order. We're going to go out of order just a second. This first bill will take just a second.
Wait a second.
Representative Erdahl. And then we're going to go to the Representative Cox. We're going to go out of order because the Erdahl bill won't take long. Representative Magnus moves to the minutes of April 5th, Tuesday, April 5th, 2005. Any additions, corrections? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, Representative Erdahl moves that House File 2382 be recommended pass and sent to the Ag and Rural Development Finance Committee. We've had a request from leadership that she goes over there. So, very briefly, Representative Erdahl, this is just a resolution. We don't spend much time on memorializing resolutions in this committee, or should we anywhere in this body. But I'm sure you have a fine one here. Could you briefly describe your resolution, and then let's get on with things.
Well, as thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. As you're all aware, there has, for the last 20 years or so, been a lot of contention between various interests regarding permitting and feedlots and issues in the countryside. And I bring this resolution to you at the behest of my state senator, Steve Dill, who has been trying to make peace in the countryside and end the feedlot wars. I know that one of the admonitions of our esteemed chairman of the committee is to have peace in the valley, and I believe that this resolution does that. So there shall be peace, love, and understanding. And I kind of look at it as Woodstock for livestock.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. And this bill greatly expands the scope of my comments of peace in the valley, because now it's peace, harmony, love, and acceptance of diversity in the valley. But with that, I hope there's no one wants to testify on this bill. Is there anyone who wants to testify for or against this bill? Any questions from members? Seeing none, Representative Erdahl renews the motion. House File 2382 be recommended pass sent to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Development, Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion passes.
Let my senator thanks you all.
And
at least he thanks most of you.
We live for his thanks.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hamilton.
Are we supposed to sing the song that's printed on the back?
Is it Kumbaya or?
The Hummus.
Aquarius. We'll pass on that. Okay. Harmony, understanding, sympathy, trust, the bounty. Oh, forgot about that. That was a part of my life that I don't remember much of. I really don't. With that, Representative Cox.
Maybe one, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Erdahl.
May the record note that took about 3 minutes of our time.
Vast waste of that. Okay. Thank you, Representative Erdahl, for that fine piece of legislation. Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I will move the House File 894 be recommended passed and sent to the General Register.
That's correct.
Representative Cox, usually we like to get the bills near the author once in this committee.
Mm-hmm.
Is the AO5-0341 amendment on your behalf?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair.
I will therefore move that amendment to get the bill in the order the author would like. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion prevails. We now have House File, amended version of House File 894, Representative Cox. First of all, I'll ask the question, with the amendment, is there anyone that wishes to testify against House File 894 as amended? That means in this committee we have the Reader's Digest version condensed.
Okay. We will get that, Mr. Chair. I wish to state that you caused me a little bit of problem when you first said I was going to be after a feedlot bill. As I looked at the agenda, I looked around quickly, but I appreciate that resolution for a feedlot. So,
Representative Cox, I think we did set a record here for the quickest feedlot bill in the history of this great state.
I think you did.
Okay, I just couldn't quite handle that one. But anyways, here we go.
Okay, members, House File 894 is a bill that's basically allows the DNR to make some needed changes to the lists and maps of public waters and inventory, issues cease and desist orders and so forth, and clarify some definitions. I have Kent Luckesmall, the director of Waters Division for the DNR, with me, and I'd be happy to turn it over to him and let him run through the bill very quickly. I don't know how much detail you want, but you can let, if you wish, you can let him start and stop him if it's getting more than you need to know.
Okay, Mr. Luckesmall, if you could please walk us through the bill, since there is no opposition that I'm aware of.
I don't know yet.
Or there may be? Okay, I should say from folks out here. So if you could please walk through the bill quickly, and then if we need to slow you down, we'll slow you down. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kent Luckesmall, the director of the Division of Waters for DNR. This bill does several things, somewhat housekeeping things for the Division of Waters. Section 1 deals with the public waters inventory and provides a specific authority to make corrections to the inventory, specifically add or subtract trout streams, and add or subtract public waters that have been created as a requirement of a permit. The existing law doesn't give us the ability to re-look at the inventory that was done in the late 1970s, early 80s, and this section does that. Section 2 is the section that was just amended. That provides for cease and desist orders authority, and our goal was to expand that to include groundwaters. There were some concerns raised when we changed that to just read waters of the state, because waters of the state is very inclusive. So the amendment the amendment deals then with adding groundwater quantity to the existing language that's in there, so we can deal with violations through a cease and desist order relating to groundwater quantity. Section 3 deals with structures on public waters. We've had issues with boathouses in the state and people building structures over public waters, then applying for and receiving a license as a watercraft, and there's been some very unique applications of existing laws to try to circumvent what people can build on public waters. So this clarifies that section of law to allow us to deal with people building condos on barges that aren't watercraft, and we can then regulate that sort of activity. Section 4 deals with the ability to record an order, a civil order of the commissioner on the title. Right now, we can do that as a Liz Pendens action when there's a judicial action. This allows clear authority to do that with a civil action. Section 5, since we've changed the system of collecting fees, Section 5 brings this into compliance with the new process. And basically, it's a public service type of action, because the law reads right now we have to accept that the money and the permit application at the same time before we can start processing it. And what we want to be able to do is start processing the permit application, and we send out a bill to the permit applicant, and they would pay them that bill. Section 6 was added in a previous committee to deal with the clarification on this sale of land in Scott County. And it basically is, there were restrictions placed on the land, and this provides that those restrictions only deal with the public waters wetland, very specifically one wetland, not all of the other Wetland Conservation Act or other wetlands identified on the property. And that, Mr. Chairman, is a very quick summary of the bill. I could go into more detail if any members wish.
Thank you, Mr. Luckesmall. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question, or could you explain a little more how this affects boathouses?
Mr. Luckesmall.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This doesn't affect the existing boathouse communities in Winona and St. Paul and others where there's historical uses provided. That section, located on page 4, lines 19 through 28, is basically says the same thing, but it was rewritten to be more clear. And what it does add is lines 27 and 28. Within a commercial marina that has a permit, they could have their little gas sales building. That's the new addition. Otherwise, that reads the same for existing historical boathouse communities.
Representative Hamilton. Any other questions for the witness or the author of this bill? If not, I'll renew my motion that House File 894 as amended be recommended pass and sent to the Ag Environment Natural Resources, I will renew my motion that House File 894 as amended be recommended pass and sent to the General Register. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Cox.
Thank you, Member.
And Mr. Lachesmo.
Thank you, Mr. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we will now go to item next, Representative Loeffler. I will move House File 1895 be recommended to pass. Sam, are there any amendments?
There's an amendment.
There's an amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, there's a DE1 amendment.
Okay, they're coming out now. Let's just wait a second. Let's get those passed out. So we want to work on the bill as amended. It's an author's amendment, Representative Loeffler?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And members, this is our last meeting, as far as I know, unless leadership tells me different. If there's some bill we need to hear after deadline, which can happen from time to time. So this will be our last meeting. We had the meeting room for tonight. We gave that up to regulated industry, so we will be done at 4:15, having voted yes or no on all four bills on the agenda. I think we're fine on time here. Just so members know where we're at.
Mr. Chairman, do you want me to do mine again?
Sure. Sure. I was reading something you handed out here. It was something about Aquarius or something. Yeah, it was a fine piece of legislation, I'm sure. Okay, do members have the DE1 amendment? Okay, I will move the H1895 DE1 amendment. Any discussion? This is just to give the shape the author like. Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have House File 1895 as amended. The motion would be to go to Ag, Environment, Natural Resources, Finance. With that, Representative Loeffler, welcome to the committee. First of all, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify against House File 1895 DE1 as amended? Representative Loeffler, in this committee, that always enhances one's chances, so therefore, go ahead and present your bill. And we will then open it up for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. This bill does essentially two things. One, it updates our statutes defining Dutch disease trees to more broadly address all the threats that currently face us. The statutes were put in place when Dutch elm first came to the state of Minnesota in the early 60s, and then we established a remediation program after that. Then we had oak growth that came through. Now we have gypsy moth, which is infesting a major part of our state, particularly in the Arrowhead and along the eastern border, and watching for the emergence of emerald ash borer. And so we've proposed changing the language to make it more generic to any pest or pathogen that might threaten our forest. This is a statewide bill. There was some confusion in the early definition of it in some of the publications that came out. When the shade tree disease bill was the program was really active, we had over 400 communities throughout the state of Minnesota participating. In fact, over half of the money went to Greater Minnesota. Many people think of our trees and our shade trees as primarily an aesthetic effort, but it truly is much more an environmental investment in our communities. They do a significant amount to clean our air. They're basically like a natural air conditioner for many of our homes and make a big difference on energy utilization. It has an impact even on things like street maintenance. Streets that are shaded by large trees last 7 to 10 years longer than those that aren't. So it has a number of wonderful impacts, including the control of stormwater runoff in our urban area, and we're dealing with those kinds of issues all over. So basically what it does is it updates our statutes to make the definition more generic, and it appropriates money, which we'll let the finance division deal with. And with that, I would like to introduce, we have two speakers here, Kirk Peterson, who represents the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board and is speaking on behalf of some of the statewide tree groups that have been addressing this issue.
Thank you. Please state your name and who represents the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kirk Peterson from Rice, Michaels, and Walter, who represent the Minneapolis Park Board and also Hennepin County on this issue. But I'm actually here today on behalf of a statewide coalition of cities, counties, park districts and community forest groups that are concerned about the recent and very dramatic increase in diseases and pests affecting our shade trees in Minnesota. With me today also Mr. Geer Friesel from the Department of Agriculture, who gave a quick overview of the program and a little bit more of its history. As most of you are aware, we're seeing an explosive increase in tree pests and diseases all across the state. As Representative Loeffler alluded to, northern Minnesota recently was hit with a massive outbreak of tent caterpillars that are army worms that defoliated thousands of trees. We're constantly battling the gypsy moth. One of the handouts is a map of the gypsy moth traps that have been set up across the state and where those are cropping up. They're also going to be doubling the number of testing sites on gypsy moths that we're going to be doing next year. We've got other bugs coming in that are the big concern as well. We've got the Asian longhorn beetle and the emerald ash borer that have wreaked havoc in nearby states, and without very aggressive measures, those are going to be in Minnesota within the next few years. Cities all across the state are losing oak trees at unprecedented levels due to oak wilt, and there's a new thing called sudden oak death that is coming in through some southern states. So there's another one. Other handout that I gave you with the emergency on the front is put out by the Minnesota Shade Tree Advisory Committee. It has a nice little synopsis on the back of all the pretty little bugs that are coming in. Here's a blow-up of one on there called the emerald ash borer. And what might look like a nice sparkly grasshopper has actually wreaked millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of damage in neighboring states, and we really have to keep this thing out. Real quickly, Mr. Chairman, the big thing in some of the communities is Dutch elm disease. Actually, right now, Dutch elm is the biggest issue that we have. 2004 was the third worst year on record as far as Dutch elm disease outbreaks. The city of Minneapolis alone last year cut down over 10,000 elm trees at a cost of over $6.5 million. Again, that's just for the city of Minneapolis alone. When this happened back in the late 70s, this program was established. In 1977 and 1978, the peak years, over 50,000 trees alone were cut down in the city of Minneapolis. The state stepped in, started providing grant money for cities to take care of this, and there was an immediate and dramatic reduction in the amount of Dutch elm that was brought under control. So again, I've got more, Mr. Chairman, but I know you've got a full agenda, so in the interest of brevity, I'll pass it over to that. But real quickly, the reason we're before you and the policy committee is, like Representative Loeffler said, right now we can only use this program for elms and oaks, and with the ash borer and gypsy moth and other things, and we need to expand the definition, so thank you.
Mr. Peterson, on the delete all amendment, and maybe Mr. Rankin, if you could kind of follow what I'm thinking here, like several places on page 6 and 7, you eliminate disease and you insert pest. In other places, you leave disease, and then it's an or pest infested. Wouldn't we want to, on all of these, have disease or pest? Why would we want to, on some of these, just delete disease and just go to all pest? Aren't we still concerned about disease?
Mr. Chairman, I think Mr. Friesel can...
Mr. Friesel, please state your name and who represents the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to be here. My name is Geer Friesel. I'm manager of plant protecting programs for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. The term pest is really all-inclusive, and it's intended to include insects, disease, whether fungi, bacteria, viruses. So the pest is a much broader term. So the intent is to have pest would be including disease.
So pest does include disease, for the record?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. One question, or Mr. Rankin, does that sound about right?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. You see the new definition on page 1 of shade tree pest, and it includes pests or pathogens affecting the growth of life.
Okay. And then also on page 7 of the delete all line, starting line 3, it says the commissioner shall not make grants for sanitation, reforestation, or wood utilization disposal systems in excess of 67% of the amounts appropriated for those purposes of municipalities located within the metropolitan area. Now, Representative Loeffler had stated that she thought the money was going out about 50-50, seven county metro versus statewide. And that sounds somewhat reasonable, although in Representative Moe's district, my guess is there'd be more trees in Representative Moe's district than Minneapolis. So this is probably a safe bet on that one. And so I'm concerned about the trees in Representative Moe's district. I've hugged them before. I guess that would make me a tree hugger. Okay, I like your trees. Okay. So what does that language mean, that in excess of 67%? What are we talking about there?
Mr. Chair, I believe that was, backing up historically in the 70s and early 80s when these appropriations were made, about half the money was going to the metropolitan area or the seven county area, and the rest was going to some of the other communities. And as representative officer, there's about 400 communities that participated in the program. I am guessing that this was intended to ensure that the bulk of the money did not go just to the metropolitan areas, that it was intended to be broader.
What does that mean there? In excess, what are you doing there? In excess of 67% of the amounts appropriated for those purposes. That's saying that the metro area could get 67% of the money.
Mr. Chair,
do we have a problem with an issue of fairness here?
This is existing statutes from the 70s, and then that's
the age of Aquarius. You know, if you think about it, I mean, yeah, Minneapolis has problems, but so does Lanesboro and Joyce, Tawny, and Brattsburg, and places in between, and Wilmer and Deer River and other such places. It seems like there's a huge concentration of money going to the Seven County Metro here. I mean, most of the trees aren't in the Seven County Metro.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I don't believe the statute's mandating that amount goes to the metropolitan area. And in fact, in the past, in the last year of the program, in 1982, there was a brekout where $6.7 million went to the metro area and $9 million went to non-metro areas. And those percentages...
We're getting a little better here. A little better. Representative Moe.
Mr. Chairman, to that point, reforestation efforts in northern Minnesota are mostly paid out of the DNR budget. We also have bonding that we were passed in this bonding bill for reforestation efforts. So while this would be helpful for us, there are also other programs in place to support our efforts in northern Minnesota for the forestry industry.
Just looking out for your trees, Representative Moe.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Pennis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. Number one, is this an agency initiative? And number two, it's $15 million appropriated. Is that different from what's been appropriated in the past?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pence, this is not an agency initiative, and we recognize that this is not part of the governor's budget. And I was asked to testify strictly on from a standpoint of providing background and technical expertise.
Mr. Pennis?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my second question was, $15 million is the appropriation. Is that what it's been in the past? And don't go back to 70, 1970.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Peterson? Representative Pennis. This program actually hasn't been funded since the mid-80s. At its peak in 77 and 78, it received as much as $24 million a year in state money. And then as the Dutch Elm and Oak Wilt were brought under control, the state funding was brought out, and you can see that the reduction of tree disease went with it.
Mr. Friesel, then, or Representative Pennis, I'm sorry.
Well, Mr. Chair, so this would be $15 million dollars, new money we need to find.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm not questioning the need. I'm just asking.
That's correct.
Get it clear.
Mr. Friesel, then to Mr. Representative Pinson. Mr. Friesel, the way this language is in the D1 amendment, would the Department of Ag then have the ability to go where the problem is across the state? I mean, if you find in Worthington there's a problem, I mean, you know, you got to kind of be able to bob and weave and move like a butterfly, sting like a bee type of thing. You know, so do I envision this program would be there's a problem in Wilmer, there's a problem in Detroit Lakes, that's where you go?
Mr. Chair, the way the statute is set up and then the associated rules, there's actually quite a structure that's in place that requires that communities have to develop a pest control plan. They have to designate an advisory panel, and so there's a whole lot of processes, and then they need to submit that plan to the Department of Agriculture. So the department becomes much like a grants administrator, and we would be passing through the dollars based on those plans that are submitted by each of the communities.
Well, what's going to happen if we have an outbreak in West Ponunk, Minnesota, or Shifting Sands, Minnesota, and it's about 300 people, they got a problem? Are they going to be able to go through this whole process? They don't have the access to the folks who would have to get this through so they could get something, would they, or how would that work?
Mr. Chair, I would imagine that the department would have some expedited methods in place that we could move the funds through fairly quickly. Most of these pests, though, are situations that should allow some time to address. I would also, from the looking at the past programs, it appeared that many of the pest control plans were very similar in appearance. So I would think that once a community has a template in place, that can simply be built on fairly quickly.
Okay. Representative Pettis, you still have the floor? Or we're done? Okay. Representative Finstead, then Heiger. Representative Finstead.
Just a quick question to the department. If this bill doesn't pass, how are some of these things going to get done? Or aren't they? Are they simply not going to happen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Finstead, the department does have a very active invasive species program in place. We do receive some federal funding. We receive about $300,000 for gypsy moth, about $50,000 for sudden oak death. So those are programs that are in place that we do to survey and try to detect some of these plant pests. The difference with this statute is it provides money that allows communities to implement either sanitation or reforestation processes. So we do not do any of those sorts of measures right now other than some eradication programs. So it's a little different approach.
Representative Finstead?
Mr. Chairman, can I follow up on
this? Mr. Peterson.
Representative Finstead, part of the concern that we have, at least from the Minneapolis Park Board, is that in many cases the work isn't going to get done or it's going to get done at a lower level. We can cut all the trees we want in Minneapolis and dispose of them, but if there are other communities around the area that, for whatever reason, are not able to be as aggressive, whether or not they've laid off their tree inspectors or cut back on their tree trimming cycles, that's going to impact us, and it's going to make it much more expensive in the future. So we are seeing the situation where even though we're doing as much as we can, if a neighboring community or someplace down the line isn't able to be as aggressive because they don't have the funds, the work just isn't getting done at all, and the problem is spreading. So we really need to get back on top of it.
Representative Finstead?
I just keep thinking back to rural Minnesota, Mr. Chair, and the answer in my community would be a chainsaw and a match. And it would be quite a bit less than $15 million. But I do understand the realm of the world we live in and as far as Minneapolis and so on and so forth. It's probably not the answer. So,
thank you, Representative Finstead. Mr. Friesel, on page 1 of the DE1 amendment, lines 19 and 20, it says, and this kind of goes to the question I was asking earlier, they have to have, it's outside the metropolitan area, it has to have an approved disease control program. Does everybody inside the metropolitan area already have one? Are we fencing somebody out here because you don't have an approved disease control program, so you don't get any funds?
Mr. Chair, that's part of the...
Mr. Friesel?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I believe that's part of the definition of municipality, where I think they're defining...
I guess my question is on 19 and 20, is that going to be a hindrance for Canton, Minnesota, population 327, to apply for these monies?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe so. And again, this is existing statute, and in the past, the smaller communities were able to participate and submit disease control plans. There should not be any impediment or hindrance.
It's not that I'm paranoid. It just seems like everybody's after me. Mr. Heigerken?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My total reaction to this is that we're asking the Department of Ag, and I'm constantly sitting there talking to urban legislators, and they view a CREP program, for example, as we really gave the Ag Department something. But no, you haven't. You've just taken a whole lot of my farmers out of farming. You took a lot of farmers out of business. And when we appropriate it through the Department of Agriculture, you have your metro legislators, there we spend another $15 million in agriculture. But are we? I'd be in favor of this bill if 90% of it would be going to outstate. And if there's any way we can amend this bill, I'd be in favor of this. I would like to see more of a bang. I mean, when we're looking at, I think I've always said we need an urban CREP program. We need to take some of the areas along the Mississippi River and start and taking some of those expensive houses that are out of there and put them in a CREP program and worry a little bit more about what we're doing in the metro, 7-county metro area than we're doing outstate. But again, this sends a message to our suburban legislators and our metro legislators that, hey, we just gave Ag Department another $15 million. And I have to explain again. In reality, we're only getting probably of that $15 million, what, 20% of it?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Heidkarken. I actually think that this actually, and my intent is to have it statewide. The Minnesota Shade Tree Advisory Committee, which is statewide, really has set this as a priority. They did a survey recently this year, and they had statewide asked all cities what, you know, their experience was with tree disease issues, whether they saw it as a major problem, a major drain on their budget. There's more detail here than you want to absorb. But there were 132 communities that said that it was a critical issue facing their community. 408 said it was very important. So we have, you know, 540 communities of the 855 in Minnesota that have said this is a major drain on their budget. It's a major issue confronting their residential neighborhoods, and they're not able to keep up. And we know that if you don't keep up, it just gets worse and worse. And so I think they're doing their best they can with tight budgets, but they realize they're losing ground, and this is a way to start dealing with it. And it's a way to also update our statutes, because gypsy moth is a bigger problem in greater Minnesota than it is in some parts of the urban area. And so this allows us to say we're going to address all perils that affect our shade tree areas, whether it's in a residential neighborhood, in a suburb, in a city, in a small town or a small community. It allows us to focus resources. Getting the dollars is always a challenge, but the community throughout the state has said this is a real major drain on their township and city budget.
Thank you. It's just a follow-up. You know, I'm just heading back to education finance, and we had a debate there. We're spending $12,400, the governor's proposal, on school kids in Minneapolis, and $6,900 in KMS. A tree is a tree here as well. And I'm worried about the tree in Minneapolis getting that much more than the tree in rural Minnesota. And the way the bill is constructed right now, we're going to see the same scenario in play.
Chainsaw to match.
Yep.
Okay, I'd like to make an amendment. This is the policy committee, and I think the dollar amount should be looked at another day, sitting over in Ag Finance. I would move to, on page 8, on line 3, delete the $15 million and just have a blank there. I don't get hung up on the money. I think the program is probably a good idea, but I don't know if that's the magic number. So any discussion on that? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We'll let the finance folks work on finance. I'd also, while Representative Heigerken is still here, I'd like to go to page 7, and this is current law. I'd like to go to page 7, line 5, delete 67 and insert 50. That seems to be what we try and do around here is 50-50. Any discussion on that? That's current law. Representative Heigerken?
Representative Davis.
Not 90-10, as I said.
Yeah, I realize that, but in education, it's not 50-50. It's 66-33.
Well,
I'd like to return this one. Give them 33, and we'll take the 66.
My motion is 50%, Representative Panis.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, I guess, isn't there a forest reforestation program or restoration program? Because I know as farmers, we all know that if we accidentally plow into the wetland because of a dry year, we have to restore it at whatever cost. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you lose a tree, I guess you restore the tree at whatever cost. There is no program that helps me restore wetlands. Just a point.
Point well taken. Okay, any further discussion on the Representative Moe?
Mr. Chairman, just to your point on line 4 and 5 of page 7, it does say in excess of, in your amendment would be 50%. So that means that the Department of Agriculture would have the latitude to use more in Greater Minnesota if it became necessary because of a gypsy moss infestation or whatever. It just, they couldn't use any more than 50%. So, Bud, you still might get 90% in Greater Minnesota if our trees are infested with gypsy moss.
Okay, further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevailed. Okay, I think we've come to peace, love, harmony, and understanding of diversity of trees. Any further questions? Hearing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 1895 as amended be recommended pass and sent to the Ag, Environment, Finance Committee, and Natural Resources, and all those things. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, members, we have the last bill here. It's Representative Welty. We'll move House File 2045 be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Ag. There's an appropriation, right? Ag, Environment, Natural Resources, Finance. And then, members, since this is our last meeting after the Welty bill, I would like to just make a few announcements, closing remarks, if I might. Generally, after the last bill, everybody's kind of in a hurry to get going. I understand that, but I would like to just make a few remarks after the last bill. Yeah, in your packets, members, you should have a Representative Magnus provided us with an interesting article that you should have. It's agbizdirect.com. I just want to point that out. You might want to take a little look at that. Okay, Representative Welty, is there any amendments to your bill?
No, but I thought maybe we could amend the motion and send it right to the consent calendar.
That sounds good to me, except there is money.
Yeah.
So we won't be able to do that one. But okay, Representative Welty, if you could please present your bill. Is there anyone in the audience, first of all, that wishes to testify against House File 2045? Okay, you know what that means, Representative Welty?
The short version?
The short version.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, thank you for hearing my bill. House File 2045 really was the result of the ethanol testimony that we heard on Chair David's ethanol legislation. And during the testimony, we heard from a number of organizations or from a number of groups that came to testify as to the effects that ethanol may potentially have upon engines and upon emissions. And so I began thinking, if we're going to become a leader in ethanol in the state of Minnesota, if we're going to become a leader in ethanol production and usage around the United States, then maybe we should have some research to back up what are the positive effects of ethanol in engines. And this legislation specifically addresses ethanol combustion in engines, the fuel efficiency of ethanol, the corrosion potential of ethanol in engines, and then also the different fuel blends. And a number of you I saw on the House floor, I asked you if you wanted to sign on to the bill, and I know that the majority of the members here on the committee have signed on as co-authors to the bill. Now, when I was putting this bill together, first of all, just so everyone is clear, this money is coming out of the general fund. In the original bill I had drafted, it was going to come out of the tails of the ethanol producer payments. A lot of people were hesitant about that. They didn't like that, so I didn't even submit the original bill. So I redrafted it, and this bill is before us, and it comes out of the general fund. And I contacted Minnesota State University Mankato, and I also contacted the University of Minnesota to find out if they would be at all interested in the grants if they were appropriated. Both of them said yes. Minnesota State University Mankato came before us to testify. Dr. Bruce Jones testified on the research that they had done at Mankato, so I followed up with him, and he said, Andy, this would be great for our university because it would give us the ability to hire grad students, something that we've never done before, and it would allow us to have a long-term study on ethanol and the ethanol blends and the fuel efficiency and the corrosion. And so he really liked the idea, and he drafted a letter of support, which you have received. Also, the University of Minnesota, they have the Center for Diesel Research. And in the Senate committee, this member came to testify, Derek Zarling. He works for the Center for Diesel Research, and he testified as to the what they have done at the University of Minnesota and what they will do with these research grants if they are awarded the grants. Now, the grants that are stipulated in this bill are two $50,000 grants, up to two $50,000 grants in the years 2006 and 2007, and that's all I am requesting. Now, I'm a firm believer in a public-private partnership, and I have been made aware that there are interest groups who are willing to put substantial dollars behind this research. Now, the main reason I'm coming before you with the request from the state is I believe we need unbiased research, and that's the key to this. Because if the corn producers, if some of the ag groups, or if the automotive industry comes forward with their research and their results, many times we think that they're biased. This provides state-funded research that should come across as unbiased and should back up any of the claims as to the effects of ethanol. Hopefully they're all positive, and if so, I believe that this is a great step forward in increasing ethanol usage around Minnesota. So with that, I will turn it over to testifier Valerie Jarek, who is here to testify on behalf of the bill in favor of it.
Welcome, Ms. Jarek. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record. The discussion we're having up here, I just want to clarify, is online on page 1, line 13, it says ethanol development program, the money, but I'm assured that the money does come out of the general fund.
Yep.
And if you go to 41.8.09, that refers to ethanol producer or ethanol development program. So we just want to make sure it's where we're saying. Welcome to the committee. Ms. Jarek, please state your name and let us know who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Valerie Jarek, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Corn Growers Association. We do support this legislation. We know that in the process of getting a waiver for E20, as that moves forward, we're going to have to do some of this stuff to satisfy the EPA requirements. The corn growers are willing to do something to do this kind of research. This bill does require a match from the private sector. If this is an appropriate study that comes forth and application being proposed that we could get behind, we would be more than happy to do that on behalf of the corn growers. And the ethanol producers as well have said that they would be willing to step up to the plate and help with doing some of the research in the course of getting the waiver. So this would help us. I do think in the other body they did have language that addressed these grants to go to the university system. That would put some credibility behind it because, as Representative Welty said, if we do this research on our own as corn growers or the ethanol industry or the auto industry, we'll probably all question one another's data as it comes forward. I do think having an independent party like the university does help establish that credibility factor that we're going to need. We've had these arguments and debates on the virtues of ethanol for so long, and we are revisiting all the old E10 arguments, and this may help put some of that to rest if we do something that's with an outside group. With that, I just tell you that we do support this legislation, and we hope that it can move forward and you can find a little bit of funding for it.
Well, Ms. Jarek, I've always thought that any evidence that supports my position is credible.
That's why we all know studies don't.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. Jarek? We're from Hamilton.
Yes, I've got, first of all, a statement and then a question, Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
Representative Welty, you know, when we talked about this, I was concerned on where these dollars were going to come from. You know, our priority to make up those producer payments on ethanol, that was a concern, and you did address that, correct? That's the way I understand that, and I thank you for that. My question is, we had testimony here. We heard testimony in the committee from the EPA, and their talk about, I believe the dollar amount was a waiver process of about $5 million to do some additional studies and whatnot. What type of studies and scientific data do you expect to receive on the $100,000 versus what the EPA cannot get off of their $5 million investment?
Okay. For example, Alty?
Well, there are a couple things. First of all, I believe the EPA is not going to address potential corrosion in engines, and that's something that will be addressed in this legislation. This legislation is specifically going to revolve around engines. It will revolve around emissions. Of course, we will have EPA studies coming back that will show emissions. But also, if you take a look at the letters that you have received from both the Center for Diesel Research and also Minnesota State University Mankato, you'll see that they currently do this type of research, and so it's something that they see as a match to what they already do. And if we don't necessarily, I'll just address it this way, if we feel in this committee that maybe emissions isn't something that needs to be addressed because that will be addressed in the EPA document, I'm fine with taking that part out. But I still believe, if they're already doing this type of research at their university and it's not going to cost them a great amount, then we could leave that in there. But really, you know, we can address a number of other factors, and part of that is the corrosion on engines and then also fuel efficiency, you know, miles per gallon.
Representative
Hamilton. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Welty. Is this duplicating any studies as far as or any initiatives in other bills, the ethanol bill or anything like that, to your knowledge?
Representative Welty.
To my knowledge, we haven't seen anything that is appropriating money to research, specifically unbiased research, and Valerie Jarrett can address that.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yeah, I'm not aware of any other monies available for studies.
Mm. Well, and to that, Representative Hamilton, the reason this bill is here so late is I felt originally that it was duplicative, and I'm not 100% sure if it is or is not. And I think as it moves to the Finance Committee, if it does, that'll be a question I want to know more. In my bill, with the waiver of the E20 by the EPA, are they doing these studies? If they are, we really don't need this. But if they're not, then maybe there's some reason to have it. But your point's well taken, and that's something that we'll be addressing here further. Representative Finstead, or to that point, Representative Ball?
Roughly to that point.
Okay, to that point.
Yeah.
We'll show some latitude. You're building a base. The situation's fluid.
I think that this particular research would be helpful. We're at, focusing on the corrosion. Where I live, a lot of people are concerned about E20 or E10 because of chainsaws and snowmobiles. They have this idea that this is going to corrode their motors, or they don't want to run this stuff through their motors, so we can put that argument to rest. And on a slightly different point, I know grad student labor is bargain, so you could, for $100,000, you can probably employ an army of them. Rukavina might have a problem with the minimum wage, but I think this will be money wisely spent.
Representative Mullen, it is just two engines, I believe, motor vehicle engines, or this one, not the smaller engines. But are there ads out there running with the Taxpayers League ripping on me on the ethanol bill?
Not rural Minnesota. Maybe in the city.
Why do I feel that the Taxpayers League's attacks on the esteemed chairman really probably don't have a lot to do with ethanol?
Mr. Chairman?
Is that possible to that point, Mr. Hamilton?
Yeah, it's because you're paranoid. You think everybody's out to get you.
I did go to the doctor for that, and the doctor said, you're not paranoid. You know, I went to the doctor and said, it seems like I'm paranoid. Everybody hates me. And the doctor came back and said, no, you're not paranoid. Everybody does hate you. So it's cleared up. Representative Finstead.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I saw the Campaign Finance Board talking to the Taxpayer League out in the hallway actually before.
With some black helicopters in the background, too. Okay.
All right.
Very reassuring. Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question for Representative Welty.
Sure.
In your testimony, you talked about the need for a long-term study, which I agree. But I'm just wondering, are we getting the best bang for the buck? I see that any grant recipient may receive funding for no more than 2 consecutive years. I mean, does that fulfill the need of a long-term study that you had pointed out? Do we feel that we can, for $100,000, really get some beneficial evidence and study done in 2 years?
Representative Welty.
Representative Finstead.
If you're ever in doubt, just say representative.
I think you raised. I knew it. I think you raised. You know, you raised a very good point. And part of the long-term study, if I go back to that, if you take a look at Minnesota State University Mankato and what they said, and also the University of Minnesota, both have been doing research on ethanol since 1993 and since 1996. One, if you look at Minnesota State University Mankato document, Dr. Jones had said that they were actually performing the tests as far as corrosion on components of engines, but they were only able to perform that for about a year. And so he'd like to continue that study. And I believe that these dollars, if he was to receive them for the next 2 years, he would have those dollars available to continue the study for at least 3 years. And if we need to come back at the end of the three-year term and reappropriate in 08, 09, we can do that. But what I didn't want to do is create an ongoing fund that we're going to be putting money into if that's not the case. We don't need it. So that's why I limited it to the 2 years right now.
Representative Finstead, then we'll go to Hamilton. Yep. Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you mentioned that they're already doing this. Is someone from MNSCU here? I haven't read this yet, but I guess I'll just ask you, Representative Welty, since you are here. I want to say Mankato State, but MNSCU, whatever, Minnesota State University Mankato campus. Are they currently doing this? I guess ultimately the question is, if we don't pass this, are they going to still do it? Are we adding on top of something they're already doing?
I believe that when I talked to Dr. Jones the last time, he said that they didn't necessarily have the resources to continue their research at this time. And so this would allow them to do that. And not only that, but expand upon what they have with hiring the grad assistants, because he said what has been happening lately is they've had undergrads, and sometimes grads will work with them, but there's not really a consistency, which this legislation would allow them to have, and they would be able to do more in-depth research, which they haven't been able to do.
So just to straighten my mind out here, so if this bill does not pass, the research on this topic will stop.
I believe it will. If not, there will most likely be less research done than in the past.
I have a question for you. You had a bill up today on the campaign finance board. How'd that go? Are they eliminated or?
It's looking good for you, Representative.
Good, that's what I'd love to hear. Before we go to Representative Hamilton, and you are on the list here. As I read this, it says on line 12, page 1, line 12, from within the appropriation for each fiscal year to the ethanol development program under this section or other appropriate money. So in my mind, that says that it could go from the tails. Representative Junkie, help me out here. The keeper of the statutes had an idea how to clear that up a little bit. Mr. Rankin, can you please share that with us? And this proposed amendment says, how would we do that?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, to remove any hint of the possibility that money currently assigned to the producer payment program might get diverted to this, we could look on page 1, line 12. Middle of the sentence is the word for. Delete that and insert in. And the word 2 at the very end of the line gets deleted. All of line 13 gets deleted, and everything before the comma on line 14 gets deleted, and new language is inserted where that several lines is deleted, saying for purposes of this subdivision.
And Mr. Chair, I'd accept that as a friendly amendment.
Mr. Chairman, that would mean that only appropriated money for this subdivision could ever be used for this subdivision.
Any questions for members? The author finds it friendly. I will move the amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, any other questions? Representative Hamilton?
Well, that did address one of my questions that I had. The other one is, you talked about Representative Welty, you talked about private dollars. Do you know of any investment or any individuals that have come forward as far as to offer private dollars?
Ms. Jarrett?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, the corn growers have indicated that from the Corn Research Promotion Council, they have spent an enormous amount of money over the years promoting ethanol and doing various activities to help further that industry, and they are willing to help do some of this kind of activity. I mean, they would want to look at the scope of the study and make sure that it's, you know, something they'd be interested in, but they definitely would be. And I would, going back to Representative Finstead's question about the university and long-term study, I'm just chatting with Representative Welty here. I recall that when Dr. Jones was here at this, I believe it was this committee, when he testified on the study he'd been doing on ethanol, that data was getting fairly old. I don't recall that he was really doing anything currently.
1999, I think.
I believe so.
Okay, and I want to reiterate to members that you know, this bill goes to ag finance and natural resource and all that, that I am going to be looking further into the Senator Dallas Sam's E-20 bill, Senate File 4, look into that closer to just see what that EPA study is. And if we're duplicating, then I'm going to recommend that it doesn't go anywhere. If it's not duplicated, then it'll be the will of the body and go from there. So with that, any further discussion? Hearing none, Representative Welty renews his motion that House File 2045 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Ag, Finance and Natural Resources. I can never say that. What is it? The Ag, Environment and Natural Resources Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now, if I could just have your attention for just a few seconds here, I'd like to go through some thank yous here. I'd like to thank the Academy. I've always wanted to say that. First of all, I'd like to thank Denise Berger, CLA, and she's first because last time I did this, I forgot her. I was so embarrassed, I could hardly stand it. So Denise Berger, number one on the list. And to the committee administrator, Craig Clark, the keeper of the statute, Sam Rankin, one of the best cooks in the world, Jennifer Burquam, the page, we thank you so much. Jennifer really did a great job, and her latest task was when the regulated industries had the audacity to think that they could come down here and take our room, she got them out of here right now. Ed Werner, Republican Research, Dave Musilevich, Research for the DFL, we thank you so much for the work that you've done, and of course, most of all, the members of this fine committee, and I appreciate all the work that you've done. With that, good government,
Mr.
All the
Chairman,
Representative Erdahl.
And on behalf of the committee, we'd like to thank you for your efforts and the fine way that you've run things.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Erdahl. And with that, good government all the time. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.